When the only addition to your bridge over the last 10 years are those shitty columns from the Columbia, you know you are on V'ger, please, a heinous trip at Warp 5. My name is Joseph.
And I'm Computer Freeze Program. Skip past introduction to episode portion. See, it's not fun when people just cut in while you're trying to watch a episode of something Star Trek related with this other fucking plot line that has no business being there. I'm your co-host, Peter.
Peter, we have arrived at the final episode of Star Trek Enterprise. And what
arrive? That's an interesting way to phrase it. I would say we stepped in a pile of the final episode of Star Trek Enterprise. I'm sorry. Let's stick to your initial assessment, which this is not the real last.
No, it's not. This is the epilogue. The last real episode was last week.
Coda. This is season 4, episode 22. First aired the 13th of May, 2005. Ark. Riker and the USS Pegasus, 2 of 2.
Yeah.
Written by those rascals, Rick Berman, Bran Braga, directed by Alan Croker.
What's the name of the episode? You didn't say.
These are the Voyagers. Do I even need to say? You know, I knew going in that everybody hated this fucking episode, and I knew that it had something to do with Riker and Troy on the holodeck.
Mm-hmm.
I was not prepared for how bad this thing was going to be.
This is the consensus pick when they do polls. What is the worst Star Trek episode at like a convention? This is the winner right here. This is the guy. This is the one that takes it down pretty much every time.
That is absolutely not the case.
Yeah, I was about to lay down a hot take. Are you ready?
By all means.
This might result in the end of V'ger, please. Like all of our listeners may decide they can no longer tolerate my opinion because of what I'm about to say. This episode was fine. It's not good. But it's not bad. And all you nerds who fucking whine about this thing are wrong. It's not anywhere close. It's not in the neighborhood of the worst episodes of Star Trek. It's not even the worst episode of Enterprise. It's not even the worst episode of season 4 of Enterprise. There it is. I will stand by that. You are going to look me in the eye and tell me that you think Stormfront was better than this. I dare you.
Stormfront Part 2. All right, I'm looking at the webcam so I can make eye contact with you. Stormfront Part 2 was better than this.
What? Are you fucking kidding me?
Here's the deal, right?
Are you fucking kidding me? There's Peter, a get couple, the fuck out of here, dude.
Dude, there's a couple war crimes. First of all, there's a couple war crimes in this episode. I don't even know if we need to bother with fucking spoiler alerts at this point. Who's listening to us?
There's no spoilers for this.
Either you've already watched this goddamn thing, or you are just a friend of the show who is humoring us and listening to us bullshit while you're driving to work or whatever, and you're never going to watch an episode of Star Trek Enterprise. The way they kill Trip is an atrocity.
I completely agree. That was bullshit.
That's Mark 1. Strike 2 is nothing from the Enterprise crew angle feels good. As an episode of, as a Christmas special of some sort for Star Trek The Next Generation, this was okay.
Yeah, and that's what it was intended to be, and that's what it actually is. The people get hung up on disliking this thing because it's the, quote, series finale of Star Trek Enterprise.
It's not a quote, it is.
It is, it's not. They didn't make it with the assumption that it would. We saw the finale of Star Trek Enterprise, and it was structured like one. It was feature length. It had a cool guest star. All of the heroes did cool shit. There was a speech at the end. The first steps towards the Federation were born. The entire fourth season arc was wrapped up. That was it. That was the finale. This is just, hey, Trek's over now. It's over. And we want to do something that, like, is a fun coda to Star Trek that brings back, you know, when we were at our peak in season 7 of TNG, and do something fun. And
yet I had to sit through Faith of the Heart. All right. This is an Enterprise episode. Don't tell me it's a fucking Christmas romp when I gotta hit the skip intro button on it. If this thing had come out somehow as a short Trek on a 10-year anniversary on Star Trek Day or something, maybe I could cut some slack on it. But as an episode of Enterprise, they did the cast of Enterprise incredibly dirty. And in a highly rare turn of events, Memory Alpha actually has a decent, you know, shit sitting in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is definitely highly disliked by the cast of Star Trek Enterprise.
And even
do
like,
not like it.
Braga and Berman start off like, oh, this is a Valentine to the fans, blah, blah, blah. And like each subsequent paragraph, it's like them slowly admitting this thing fucking sucked to the point where they're like, we regret doing this. It should not have happened. And everybody was pissed off at us and blah, blah, blah. Anyways.
I will say, I read the same thing, right? And I accept that people hate this. I understand why they do. I don't, like I said, I would say it's the third worst episode of season 4, easily.
Third? What?
Yeah, I would put it third below both Stormfront episodes.
Well,
the fact you're willing to stare me in the eye and tell me speed running the end of the temporal Cold War, like it's on a fucking fire sale, was somehow better than this. Like,
here's,
come on.
The thing, though, is the characters in Stormfront still felt like the characters. I don't know what the hell happened in this episode, but nobody, with the exception of maybe Trip, felt like the characters that I've been watching for the past 4 seasons.
That's true. Like, first and foremost, it makes sense some of them are different. Like, I think Jillian Blaylock made a point of playing T'Pol different because we know she has the emotional crack rock issue, and then she has to be closer to her emotions, and she had to become more comfortable with that. So the fact that that continued on over the course of 6 years we didn't see, like, that makes sense. I actually kind of like that they're not completely the same. They wouldn't be.
It's not that they don't feel this. It feels bad. I don't know if Martin or Alan Croker couldn't keep people on a leash. I don't know if everybody was resentful going into this episode that it was a bullshit fuck you to the cast, or everybody was just done with Star Trek and they were like, you know, basically senior week, like, hey, we're all just going to fuck off. But almost everybody feels off across the board in a bad way. All of the plot lines feel flimsy and shallow. This fucking ridiculous Shran, they kidnapped my daughter, Taken plot that is the most.
But Shran has the new Jack Neelix coat on. How can you hate on this? It's the perfect symbiosis of the perfect coat for the perfect man.
It's flimsy as fuck, and it's disgusting, and it pisses me off that they saved Shran for this horse shit rather than putting him in Demons and Terra Prime. Speaking of which, Suval having his last episodes in Demons and Terra Prime, like, there was so much good stuff going on. I can't tell you 3 things Suval did that last episode. I think he was the first one to, like, stand and support humans after some sort of impassioned speech, but that was a rough one for him to go out on.
Well, I mean, to be honest, Suval already had his episodes with the Vulcan arc.
Sure.
And we'll get into this more next week when we do the season 4 rep, right? Like, you can't, that had to be the finale for the crew, right? Like, you had the episodes with Shran, you had the episodes with Saval, you know, you've gotten all of your minor characters their chance. Hell, like, you even got Varn Armstrong to, like, be able to come back and do all the cool.
I mean, he got the best standoff, right?
Yeah. Like, so, you know, the fact that Demons in Terra Prime was focused on your actual main cast was the right call, with just a really good villain and enough flavor sprinkled throughout to make it work. Yeah, I'm not saying this is a good episode, clearly, but I think that the complaints about it are enhanced because it is the finale. And if this were just in season 2, because they were celebrating the 60th anniversary of, I don't know, like, Gene Roddenberry's fucking asshole hair growing 6 inches, then this would, I think, be warmly received. I think people would like, maybe not the trip death, like that part, that's never going to go over well.
It's always going to be bullshit. Dog shit.
That was always going to be stupid, but the idea of like, oh, let's just look 10 years into the future and they're all about to be decommissioned. Like, it's well beyond anything that we're going to do in the show. And it's TNG characters are there. Like, you could have basically redone this. And if it was in season two, I think we'd have loved it. I think most people would love it. It was just because it was the finale. It just gets this huge minus and people hate it. And I don't think they should.
I agree with a lot of what you just said there. I still think that the Enterprise parts are bad. Again, you get rid of the faith of the heart. You just make this something else. I think this would have been a great way to draw in other characters and use Enterprise as like the back. Oh, you know, here's this historical shot or whatever. It's terrible here because it's a disservice. It's terrible here because the plot is weak. It's terrible here because season four has just been fucking fire. Mm-hmm. And again, saying, hey, if you stuck this in the dog shit depths of season two, like, yeah, this would have been great by comparison. But coming off the fucking adrenaline rush that season four was able to deliver, like, rough change in gears.
Yeah.
You know, what I thought was going to happen was we were going to get a normal episode. And then they were going to sign the fucking treaty or whatever. And then Riker and Troy were going to stand up end program. And it was going to be like a cool just cameo, right?
And you didn't know it was actually about them.
I didn't know it was going to be some sort of a wormhole next. What was Pegasus, 6 or 7?
7th season. Yeah, and thank you to Tom, whose interview will be out before this comes out, who warned us that we should watch the Pegasus. I was like, oh, that's true, we should. Did you do that, by the way?
No, man, I've been so sick. I know we weren't going to talk about other stuff, but I started watching Three Body Problem on Netflix.
Oh, I heard that's good.
The first couple episodes were, and I committed to it with my wife, and those fucking hack frauds, DB Kurtzman, Weiss, or whatever those assholes from
Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Game of Thrones, man. They got me again.
Did they?
That thing fell apart so hard, so quickly towards the end. No, I didn't watch Pegasus, and I kind of wish I did, but they lay down enough stuff here. Let's talk about the good parts.
Is this going to be the CG of the Enterprise D?
I think it's all of the 24th century stuff, right?
Yeah,
there's lot of interesting conversations to have there. I don't know.
I made a point. I asked because I did make a point of watching Pegasus. And
you with all your no children free time.
I have to carry that weight. I understand. That's my role here. Okay. Like, you're busy, you know, creating new life. I'm here to talk about Star Trek. relative worth to be determined. I think it's kind of an imperfect fit. I get what they were going for in that. Obviously, the Pegasus is an episode, a lot of really telling the story of Riker having to confront a decision he made early in his career that he now deeply regrets, and what he feels is his duty and his obligations under the, you know, the orders he's been given. And I don't, this episode doesn't ultimately work as connected to the Pegasus, because in the end, Riker doesn't actually talk to Picard of his own free will about what happened. Picard has to confront him. So why is this revelation matter?
Detail schmetails. Listen, by the time Picard confronts him, he feels a lot better about confessing.
Yes, maybe. And maybe that's what we're supposed to take away from it, is he gets called to the principal's office right after this and he's ready to talk about it. And, you know, that's why he kind of coughs it up, I guess. But I do like the idea, though, of this. It's a holodeck program and Troy is assigned it to Riker as therapy. I thought, like, that's actually very interesting, like, right off the rip.
I want you, Imzadi, to go into this holodeck program, and I want you to learn something new about yourself. And, you know, I need a deeply therapeutic session so you can find pathos. Ah, nice. Good. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to freeze to Paul in place, and then I'm going to kiss on her.
He is William Riker. He has the most potent sexual energy in the entire Alpha Quadrant, as we've established. It's why there's rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Harry Kim fell afoul of his consequence. But obviously, 10 years, I think, or so after Pegasus. So you got a very puffy Jonathan Frakes his best.
Let's do this.
Okay.
Let's be kind podcasters, and
let's
make a gentleman's agreement right now as I sit here fat and balding. That I will not point any fingers at Frakes or Sirtis and how they may or may not look in their uniforms in high def.
The uniform texture in particular.
How did it get shimmery and sparkly?
I think it always was, and that's like part of the reason why, like, we had this discussion when we reviewed Generations, by the way.
It's a whole thing I want to get into, man. That's like 80% of the conversation I want to have today is, could they have ever gone back to the well? Could you have ever gone back to using the Enterprise D in its lighting situations in a high def environment? And I think that this is the answer.
Yeah. Like, they don't look good in high def. That's why they turned the lights down when they did the movie. Like, can't let people see this. It's not good enough for these cameras. And that's clear evidence of that. Like, they look like ass. But you could go back to the well. You just have to redesign some of your,
a lot of it.
But I will say, top marks for 10 forward. So actually, hold on. There's a teaser. They're setting up that it's the future. It's 6 years after,
real quick. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's a future because everybody has a terrible name tag sewn onto their jumper now, yeah, right?
There's DePaul's stupid pillars, the pillars from the Columbia there.
To Paul's being the worst when she's wearing her ugly magenta velour bodysuit, and then she's got a velour name tag with velour, I'm sorry, a red name tag with red lettering. You can't read a goddamn thing. It's terrible. They've got little ooplets on their shoulders. They've got a Starfleet patch now on their right sleeve, which is kind of cool. And then, yeah, they get the Columbia oh shit handlebars there.
Gotta have them. And we are given the information that this is 6 years after Terra Prime, because it's 10 years total since NX-01 was launched. It's heading back to be decommissioned, so this is final ride. And Archer is one of the signatories for the Treaty of the United Federation of Planets, and that's what they're headed back for, is for the treaty signing. So Archer's diplomatic life has only grown more important over this period, and he is about to realize the destiny that Daniels has set forth and put in front of him.
Please, people don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Time Zuckerberg. And as all of this discussion is happening and everyone has marginally shittier hair, suddenly it rolls
over. But no gray hairs, man. Like, at least one person needed, like, the terrible Next Gen Season 2, like, paper, crinkled up paper bag, like old man wrinkles. Like, just Reed should have been just over the top old man with like a walker or something.
And that's when they pans over to Riker at the engineering station, and he tells the holodeck to pause so that he can leave and go do something, and his Enterprise uniform falls off and he's in his red jumpsuit and he exits the holodeck. He's on the Enterprise. This is taking place in the 24th century.
This is one of the biggest issues I have conceptually with this episode. The temporal Cold War sucked ass because instead of it being a show about, hey, here's the crew of the first Enterprise and their adventures through space, the first two seasons were basically, here's a story we want to tell you, or here's a story you want to watch, and instead it's going to be a story of everybody and their mom jerking these guys around like puppets.
Yeah.
Right? It's the fucking future taunting boogeyman.
Taunting them with their own destiny.
taunting him with their own destiny, jerking him around here, all these unseen strings attached to Archer and the Enterprise and just pulling it off. And you're not watching a show about what these people are doing with free will. You're watching them being forced to react to outside influences far beyond their control, inserting their will upon them. And here is Star Trek inserting another will upon them. It's a William T. Riker. And it's like, okay, even for your last fucking episode, these guys can't just be themselves. They're a they're a holodeck play. And numerous times throughout this episode, I start kind of getting into a scene in the flow. And then it's like, computer pause, computer jump forward, computer this. And it's like, just give me the fucking scene, man. I'm not trying to watch someone else watch YouTube skipping around. Like, it's infuriating. And again, maybe you're right. If this was a 25th anniversary thing and I wasn't there to watch an episode of Enterprise and, hey, how cool everybody's doing cameo. Everybody's in the cameo now, right? I wouldn't feel obligated like, hey, I want a good scene with good pacing. I'd be more into like the Enterprise actors just being puppets dancing around for Riker's amusement. But it's a hard fucking gear to shift into here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm reminded of like Living Witness for Voyager, of like another episode that's not really about Voyager at all, you know?
But Living Witness was so fucking badass.
That episode ruled. Where this did
Living
not,
Witness but... in the haze of everything else that's been going on, like, I hope Living Witness was one of our top five.
I'll have to go back to our Voyager rip. I haven't listened to that in a while and see if it was in our top five.
Because that was a fun ass episode. That them fighting in the...
I hope we mentioned it, yeah.
The briefing room and Janeway shooting the TV. That's still vivid in my mind.
What's vivid in my mind is when they cut back from the theme song. It's a gorgeous CG rendering of the Enterprise-D. And not the first that we're going to see. And it is
lucky me that I could see so much big, glorious D on my TV within a 1 year span.
It's true. Yeah.
I do not get tired of seeing the Enterprise D. And this is full CGI years later. I'm wondering if they just took like DS9 Dominion War galaxy classes and like if that's the model they're using at this point.
I think that this was probably newly done because even the DS9 ones wouldn't have been high def.
Completely stunned by how good all that looks. I was not ready for the level of TNG that this would be. And I'll tell you what, if you want to, hey, this is a coda, this is a love letter to the fans, blah blah blah, throw a next gen intro on this thing and I might have radically different things to say about it. Like,
it's amazing what framing would have maybe changed your perspective on.
And it's stupid to say that, but like, again, I sat through an Enterprise opener. This is an Enterprise episode and it disrespects Enterprise. Had you made this thing just some fucking for funsies TNG thing and I don't know, got LeVar Burton in there at least or something.
Well, you know, if I had my druthers and I could remake this episode, but it had to still be with the finale, what I would have done. I was like, okay, this is it. This is all for Star Trek. I'm going to try and get two actors from each show, and I'm going to show vignettes of them consulting this holoprogram at different times when they were trying to get inspiration for themselves. Like, if the idea here, if that you want to set up, is that the NX-01 is the foundational adventure that all of these people that we've seen through all of these shows was inspired by. That
the Bible. This is
their Bible.
Starfleet Bible.
This is where it all came from. It all came from Jonathan Archer and the NX-01 getting out there and doing what they did and literally forming the Federation. And then seeing like here's Riker and Troy and they're doing the holodeck because there's a piece of this that they for this. And then that's, you know, Kira and Bashir in DS9, and then the holosuite, and they're consulting something, and they're drawing some kind of inspiration off of it. And then it's Harry and Tom. Yes. They're doing, you know, like on Voyager, and then there's something about that they were trying to capture. And that could have been a better version of trying to convey, like, no, what we're doing is we're honoring Enterprise, because what we're showing is that this was the reason why all of these other people were inspired to be in Starfleet. You know, instead of just this, go use it as therapy. I think maybe that would have worked
better. You're telling me you couldn't have got Walter Koenig for 5 seconds on screen consulting with the computer? Like, you could. There's a lot of cheap people to get in all of those other properties.
Yeah.
And what you just said right there is magic and would have made the entire thing feel radically different. Braga and Berman were out of touch. They were burned the fuck out. They should have never went anywhere back near Scripps. And I think if they would have went to Manny Coto and said, here's a rough idea, make it happen, I think you very well might have been able to get something very similar. Which they took this thing and they did it the worst way possible. Period.
What the worst?
How could you have made this thing? How could you have cut Trip out of the whole thing? How could you have made this any worse?
I mean, I still think that Jonathan Frakes is a very charming guy, great actor. I love seeing him on screen. I love Riker as a character. And yeah, that was all fine. I liked it.
That's an actor on it. I'm talking about script and I'm talking about structure.
No, I don't think that script or the structure, aside from Trip's death, was really that poor. I really don't. I think it's just a matter of timing and
you
framing.
You just pointed out the whole premises of this, which was the Pegasus tie-in, was fundamentally flawed.
It doesn't quite work. I get why they picked it. Like I said, it's not a good episode. It's fine. And I think if it was framed differently and if it was in season two and he didn't kill Trip, I think people would have been very warm to it. I really do. It wouldn't take much.
So all the CGI looks great.
Yeah.
Then they get inside and instantly after I wonder, like, what the fuck's going on here? So if this thing's 2005, All Good Things was what?
Oh, they rebuilt 10 forward.
They had to rebuild a lot. And now the question I'm wondering, as I sit here and I watch this and I'm just being fucking wowed with a blast from the past, is when I'm sitting there and I'm watching the crew of the Enterprise receive their award for saving the world from the Zindi attack at Bay Stadium, which is a folding table and a tablecloth from Dollar Tree. When I'm watching the Romulans scheme against Earth and they have a picture that looks like a low resolution printout they made at a Kinko's for a quote unquote window. And all the other low budget bullshit that has gone on. How much money did Rick Berman and Bram Braga come in and tell Manny Coto, hey, here's your season budget and we're taking 75% of it because we're going to rebuild next gen.
Yeah. We're going to rebuild 10 forward in the observation lounge. Like specifically, I mean, you know what, this, what they love to do is spend all their money recreating old sets, right? Like that's all. Terry Metalis literally spent all of his money. Rebuilding the Enterprise D bridge.
But that was his money. Like, again, these are two separate things. One is season four, a killer season four under Manny Coto. And then there's this war crime that these guys are running, but it's sharing a budget and it's one taking from the other. And the, you know, the shame in all of this, Terry Metalis spent all that money on recreating the D, I think, with the intention that other people would do cool shit with it. Lo and behold, that's all dead in the water. This, they're just like, hey, let's remake all this stuff so we can tear it all down again.
I know we're in the middle of the episode, but I kind of want to talk about that real quick. I know it's been whatever. It's our show, right? We can do whatever we want. It's pause.
I don't know. We could cut it out. Computer, pause program.
Yeah. You see how irritating it is? I saw everything where it's like Terry Metalis is like, they haven't booked me to do anything. So I'm doing other stuff right now.
Code for Disney, by the way.
And there's constant rumors about potential Paramount sale, Star Trek sale, all of that still just kind of in the wind. No one knows what's going to happen. And then amongst all of that is the apparent information about what the Section 31 show is going to be. Or movie or whatever it is. And the plot sounds actually really interesting. And it's a shame incompetent people are doing it. When Grigio goes back, or I fucking forget how to pronounce her name.
The Emperor.
The Empress. Michelle Yeoh, when she goes back, to the early 24th century, and the era of the Enterprise C and the Stargazer, and gets involved with Section 31 then, and apparently her antagonist is Rachel Garrett, who's essentially the Picard of her era. And I'm like, well, that's a very interesting idea. This is an untapped, period of the whole Star Trek canon. You can literally cast a young Jean-Luc Picard. You can actually tie people into this. You can have a whole story about Section 31 versus the Dudley Do-Rights of the Federation, dealing with that. And I have no hope, of course, whatsoever that any of this is going to be handled correctly. But it's such an interesting idea of this is a great era of Trek that's never been on screen, with a lot of stuff like wars against the Cardassians. You've got a lot of awkward, kind of growth of the Federation coming up against the borders with the Romulans and the Klingons and trying to figure out what their next move is going to be diplomatically. And I would love if someone like Terry Metalis was doing the show, but they're not.
Yeah. Well, listen, Shooter McGavin or get the fuck out. Who cares about Rachel Garrett? I want Shooter in there. Bang, bang.
It's so jarring to see him, by the way, when I see that. And he's just as the tactical officer or whatever the fuck he was.
It's amazing, though. That guy did a great job of being Shooter McGavin and drawing me in regardless. And as iconic as he is as a character from Happy Gilmore, one of the best guest performances on Next Gen, in one of the most badass episodes of Star Trek period.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I think about that shift from mainline to wartime.
Oh yeah.
Just fucking hair standing up on my arm right now thinking about it. Well, anyways, I think that would be, I think there's a very high probability that if Warner Brothers is to acquire Star Trek Studios,
mm-hmm.
that wherever Section 31 is in terms of production, or Starfleet Academy, or this other stuff. And that's the bullshit with Trek, man, is that, oh no, this is happening. This is happening. Kurtzman is such a fucking liar and is just release after release of lies. What is it? Star Trek 4, they keep talking about. Chris Pine's on, this is on, and it's just pure fucking lies and bullshit. Even if these things are ready to go, I think there's a very high probability that whoever, if it's Warner Brothers that buys it, Zaslav cancels all those things, just kills them in their crib and writes them off as tax, gives them the Batgirl treatment so they can try and make a clean break on the Star Trek stuff.
I mean, I think that the only thing they're working on that might not suffer this face is literally the Section 31 thing, because Michelle Yeoh has an Oscar and it's just going to they're going to milk that for all it's worth. That's worth some money to them. So
I don't know, man.
What I do know is I love 10 Forward. I love revisiting 10 Forward. I love that they busted out all of the old looking uniforms and it just looks like it's straight out of 1989, man. I appreciate the effort they went into designing it, but on 10 Forward, as we're a half hour into the episode, we should actually talk a little bit about it. You've got Deanna talking to Will, saying, how you doing with this program? We got the log from Riker saying this is happening during Pegasus. Pressman's on the ship. He's not feeling real good about it. We know why that is. And Troy's trying to convince him to do the program as a therapeutic thing, and suggests, of course, that he spend some time as the chef, because the chef was the early counselor on the vessel. In this corridor shot, when they get to the turbo lift, by the way, the fresh-faced young ensign that comes out is, in fact, Terry Metalis, by the way.
Wait, when?
When Troy goes to the elevator and it opens and this young-looking lad comes out, it's Terry Metalis.
I missed that.
A lot of that in this episode. A lot of everybody who's involved in production being extras and being on screen, apparently. That's Keith, where he was.
David Anderson getting right up there behind him on 10 Forward. And that dude's just a consistent that guy throughout the entire thing. There's a lot of cool shit like that
mm-hmm.
all throughout this episode. And that's neat as its own thing. The brightly lit 10 Forward is really a great opportunity to start drinking these set pieces in with the bright lighting and everything we said before, like, high def is not TNG's friend.
No. No, it's not. It's almost distracting, to be honest with you. Funny in an unintentional way, but it's not its friend. The plot, such as it is actually on the NX-01, that Riker is watching a holographic recreation of, continues on when they encounter Shran, who we find out, apparently, a whole bunch of shit happens to in this 6-year period, including that they thought he was dead, but it turns out he was not dead, and he kind of maybe had a criminal arc, but the reason he's there is that Archer still owes him a favor, and he wants to rescue his adorable baby.
So, if I'm remembering correctly, the names being used here, does he end up marrying the Aenar?
Yep. Yep, that's why also his daughter kind of looks like she has the skin of the Aenar. So, yeah, the daughter's 5, so the time kind of works out.
Big disservice to the Shran character. This whole plot line is hokey and shitty. It feels two-dimensional and dumb. And basically, again, throw this episode into season 2, and that's all par for the course. But after the smart, top-notch writing that's been handling Shran for season 3 and season 4, this is such a massive step backwards in intelligence.
They could have done it like a rescue the kid thing. We should have just had it been that Shran came to him off the books and said, listen, I can't have anyone knowing about this because I'm busy trying to integrate the Andorian Imperial Guard with, you know, the Vulcan space fleet and, you know, the Earth Command. And, you know, if it comes out that, like, I had this past and these guys have kidnapped my daughter, then might all get blown up. So it like ties into the plot of him, Archer, still trying to make sure this whole Federation thing happens. Like, I mean, you could have basically done the same thing.
Here's what I need. All right. I'm tapping the bro card. There's this fucking admiral. He's going to fuck everything up. This guy's been a piece of shit. He's the one that made me attack you. He wanted the weapon to use the Zindi weapon against Vulcan. This guy is going to do some terrorist shit to derail things from our end. He needs to go. I've got the blessing of my government, but it can't be our ships taking him out. And here, we're going to go do most of what's going to happen anyways. But instead of it being space drug dealers kidnapping my daughter or whatever, when did Taken come out?
After this.
You sure? I think
that was 08, 09, yeah.
2008.
Yeah. Got him.
Who did this? Who wrote? Who stole the plot of Taken
from these
other voyages?
I mean, I don't mind the idea that, like, you know, there's been a lot of plot and like Shran's done a lot of stuff, and I also don't mind that like we've canonically acknowledged that he had a kid with this lady that he hooked up with. That it we is know.
A terrible plot. He looks like
a the coat, though. He puts on the exact new Jack Neelix coat straight off the Paramount rack. Respect the coat. Sit your $5 ass down before I make change.
It's a shame this coat had to come out of fucking cold storage for this clowny ass episode. A million ways you could have handled it better. I did like, however, that while Shran's laying down what the plan is in Archer's ready room, that Riker's sitting on the dinner potty, just soaking it all in.
Yeah, just like, oh, give it to me.
I've always wanted to sit on the dinner potty. Porthos. Not only does nobody on the crew have silver hairs, Porthos is still alive, so.
Listen, genetic engineering is not allowed for humans, but it is allowed for good boys. You know, we're making that beagle live 30 years now.
Augmented beagles.
Yes.
They won't bark. They That's live forever.
That's why they forever. Don't bark, yeah. It just made them in the perfect
There's always that, boys. That dark side of, you know, augmenting, and for this dog, it's just terrible diarrhea with the cheese. But
I do like that they use the opportunity for, like, hey, no, I'm going to help Tran, even though this is kind of shady. Why? Well, because Earth would have been destroyed. T'Pol, duh, you were there. I only got onto that damn fucking OSHA violation in space because Tran covered us.
Tran didn't just save Earth. He saved the entire fucking universe. Again, as you have pointed out, you know, we fucking Vulcan and everything else. Her putting up the level of resistance that she does was jarring. That felt very Voyager to me. Like, hey, I'm falling out of my fucking thing and going back into my pre-development loop. I do like, however, Archer snapping back at her and being like, I fucking hated Vulcans. I hated you. I had to learn to grow past it. You showed me how to do it, and that's what Tran is. We have to help him.
Again, I mean, it's very flattering for Archer. Like, this is like the first great version of Archer. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
Tran's such a good friend that we are going to go to a neutral planet, and I am going to bring very elite military guys from our planet, and we're going to go murder people that he potentially stole from.
Not just any planet, but Rigel 10, which is, of course, where they went on Broken Bow. So,
yeah.
Closing the loop.
100% less Suliban hotties.
Definitely less Suliban hotties making out with them. By the way, something that we got to make sure we talk about during our series rip is, was this show ruined by one scene in the premiere? I've seen a lot of people talk about how, like, I didn't watch it after the decon scene.
That's an open close, yes.
Yeah. I want to explore that more. But, like, also, like, the Suliban hottie, like, it was so sexual for no reason. Like, it just shoved it down your throat.
Return of the Living Dead 2 lady. What's her name? Rochelle something, I think. I like her a lot. I, you know, her being the femme fatale alien, you know, might be something interesting. It's a shame they killed her. I would have liked to see her be a reoccurring character of some sort, but
yeah.
I was thinking how much money they spent, what the tone was, specifically in relationship to that decon scene, and just what a misrepresentation a lot of that was for what the show ended up being.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really just to titillate people and get them interested on that raw.
We got
to
stop.
That's
going to be a whole thing we're going to have to explore. It's cool that they go back to Rigel, though, right?
Yeah. No, I like the idea of them kind of finishing where they started. And the plan here is apparently that this gem is actually like a flashbang grenade. And
this, you know, comically big, looks like they bought it from some sort of
some Spencer's Gift shit right here. And
some Temu.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. This is some Temu, some AliExpress. And
that thing's actually a Bluetooth speaker.
And after they blind them, they just basically shoot them like they were fish in the barrel. Just like, just gunning them down, you know, murdering everybody as you do.
Now, rewind. I think at this point, computer pause program, rewind several scenes. Didn't Riker call Troy in at this point?
Yeah, they go into the whole thing, and they kind of like review, like, oh boy, this room's real small.
I love that. I love that Riker almost busts his head on that fucking low hanging support. That how many times do you think Scott Bakula legit cracked his head on that thing?
Six. I'm going with six over 4 years.
Six per season?
No, six total. Because every time you do it, you really avoid doing it for a while.
I bet you the side that doesn't face the camera is like
got a padding on it.
Six layers of padding and like neon orange duct tape in a big X saying, watch out, Scott.
I know you like your character's supposed to like head wounds, not you. We're not insured for that.
God, when's the last time he got a good head wound?
Ooh. Had to have been when he was fighting RoboCop. The augments. He didn't really get a head wound fighting RoboCop. He had oxygen deprivation. That was more of a gunfight. Probably have to go all the way back to his Cold Station 12 when he got his ass kicked.
Well, that's enough really to carry him through like season 6 to be fair.
Yeah, there was a lot. It was augmented head wounds.
Anyways, they're together, and then they throw that bullshit line out there where
I was ashamed Commander Tucker doesn't make it back. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm going to come clean, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a spoiler somewhere a while back that Trip dies. So I've been waiting for like what dumb point they were going to shoehorn this fucking thing in. I thought for sure when he got shot in the back running to like go stop RoboCop,
that was going to be it.
That was going to be it. And I was like, man, this is a fucking lame way to kill this character off. My money was going to be that he was going to somehow the same way. Was his name Sim? Was that his clone?
Yeah.
The same way Sim basically donated his brain tissue to Trip to save his life. I would have put money that by the end of that arc that he was going to basically donate both of his kidneys or something to Elizabeth and sacrifice himself so the baby could live. And I think that would have been like a noble, cool, like I'm ensuring the future happens.
Mm-hmm.
Little did I know we were going to get this fucking thing. And not only is he going to have to die in this episode, but they're going to fucking ruin it by Troy mentioning it offhand up front. She said that shit, and I was like, I just threw my fucking notebook on.
Like, shut the fuck up, Deanna. Please. So I was like, oh, it's real shame. I'm like, oh, God, why was that the choice? But well, let's talk about the scenes that Riker has as the chef. So I told you a long time ago that the chef does appear on screen, and you'll see who it is. And yeah, they decide that the chef is going to be Riker, and that this is apparently something that's been going on during Enterprise the entire time, which is he just chit chats with everybody, and he's kind of like their bartender slash therapist
and slash Neelix, which
yeah. I get it. Like, that actually character existing would have been really cool. Why the fuck didn't you actually do that as a character, Enterprise? Why wasn't that a thing you actually did? Why is it just a gimmick at the end? That was a good idea. You fucked it up.
You're going to give me boring, stiff-ass Reed and Mayweather. Pilot Mayweather, not cool lover boy Mayweather. Not the very interesting and confident rock climber Mayweather. Not the absolutely savage UFC champion
Mayweather.
Not the psychotic, what the fuck's the Demolition Man's guy's name?
Simon Phoenix, yeah.
Not the lunatic snap-kicking Simon Phoenix Mako Weather. No, the boring Mayweather we're saddled with for like three seasons. Because an interesting chef would have been too good of an idea.
You know what? I would have loved it if maybe they didn't use him very much, but they cast someone really cool in the role.
Mm.
You could have literally cast, you know, Jonathan Frakes, have him show up like twice a season. You know, then he's just like his ancestor was the chef on the NX-01. That's like part of his legacy.
Man, here's a new thing we need to start doing for the rips, seasonal and series. And I need to make a note somewhere. I'm going to see this. The new entry we're going to have is three wishes.
I like that. Okay, we rub the lamp.
Three wishes that how to change the season or how to change the series at the end. I'm going to hang that up right there on my computer. One of my three wishes would have been to make the chef actually, what was the Suluban leader guy's name?
Oh, Silic.
Silic. And it was Silic shapeshifted the whole time, just fucking boosting info and befriending the crew and pumping them for info. And like at the end, they find out that it was like, you know, this fucking infiltrator the whole time. They could even resolve that, like, you know, at the end of Stormfront or whatever, but like how good that would have been. Great.
So we've already been talking about this for 50 minutes, and I don't think we want to do a part two, so let's speed run a few things. The Enterprise D stuff continues with eventually them and they're in the observation lounge. He's going over all the people who died and eventually confesses
the Pegasus to, people.
The Pegasus people who died and eventually confesses to Troy to say, yeah, so this is what actually happened, right? And this is all plot we already know. Pegasus was testing a cloaking device. Pressman was in charge. That test being a failure is what led to the ship being imperiled and, you know, all the rest of us that survived sworn to secrecy. And that's all fine. That all works okay. The plan to rescue Shran's kid goes off, but everyone's very concerned with making sure that Archer makes it back to sign the Federation Charter.
Big points off that there's not even a fucking remnant of Captain Picard Day signage hanging on the wall anywhere in that conference room.
Well, I mean, they probably clean that up right away.
I don't give a fuck. It's Captain Picard Day. If you're going to have some sort of can't jump back to another episode, at least have like some tape still stuck to the wall or something.
It's true. Probably. But, you know, some orderly came in and took all that stuff away.
I don't care. It's a TV show. Give me the fucking Captain Picard doll.
And the plot comes to a head when the space criminals catch back up with the NX-01 as I think Trip and Archer are having scotch toasting to warp 7 ships having been invented. And these guys bust in. There's no one else around for some reason.
Computer pause program. The fucking level of indignation and offense that I took to this entire sequence, right? This whole thing is terrible. And again, it's jarring because we've gone from amazing, great writing by a competent showrunner back to these two fucking clowns. The bad guys that were after Shran show back up somehow, even though we're told that they can't even break warp 2. They've caught up to Enterprise.
Yeah, it's some real somehow Palpatine has returned moments.
Enterprise is flying at warp, intentionally get the fuck away from them, and they board the ship in warp. It has been a long time since I've said this word, and I'm disgusted for it to come out of my mouth now, especially in related to one of the best characters on the show dying, and that's fucking Ramrod. Hey, let's pull this dumb fucking idea out of our ass. Our dumb boomer ass is like, we're going to kill someone. Let's kill Trip. Right after, by the way, we hype back up the T'Pol romance angle, which stupid that that's been completely dead for fucking 10 years after they had that emotional thing together where they lost a child.
Yeah, they're bad choice either. Like, really? They just broke up right after that? Okay.
There's another one of my wishes is that.
I liked the scene they had of like T'Pol's admitting that, like, I'm going to miss you. And it's like, I really liked Jillian Blaylock's performance in this episode of like a very emotional version of T'Pol, which is probably where she would be at that point. I like that. I just wish that it was in service to that something more meaningful.
They've had good chemistry the whole way through. I thought her they stuff did. With Frakes was weird and off-putting.
It, and this is probably our last chance to praise it. Good on Connor Trinneer and Jillian Blaylock having good chemistry on screen. Because we've seen what it looks like when people don't. And it makes such a difference. It makes romance so much more enjoyable to watch when people seem to actually like each other.
It's crazy. I can only give you one example of bad romance. Minus Will Wheaton and fucking Ashley Judd or whatever that
yeah.
was. And even that was head and shoulders above.
Ashley Judd's just so charming. Like, he just surpassed Will Wheaton's abilities.
Yeah, they sold well. But yeah, we've got an enemy ship flying up undetected, docking with Enterprise, and getting into the ship. I'm going to call that a Bran Brago. This is a Bran Rod.
This is a Bran Rod. Yeah, I like this.
They get in. Archer and Trip get into this empty ass quarter before any security or Reed or the fucking Makos that are still there. And then it's like this, it had the energy of like improv theater, right? Where they're like, give us Shran, and Archer's trying to protect Shran. And then Trip starts like getting frantic and like acting crazy and convinces them to knock Archer out. and then lures them back into what I thought was going to be like an airlock or something. But like he goes to the storage closet where they keep the best IEDs and blows the entire closet up, killing everybody. Somehow the guy that stayed back to guard Archer is mysteriously no longer in existence.
He just, his soul left his body.
Ramrod. Ramrod.
Yeah.
The worst fucking Ramrod I've seen in Star Trek, period. Killing a major character. I cannot say enough thumbs down stuff about this. This right here is enough to condemn the entire fucking episode.
It is a such a weird choice because clearly worse invader nonsense has happened on this ship before. We've literally seen it. And somehow this is the one where Trip decides like it's time for me to go full seppuku to preserve my captain's life. Like,
how do you kill an engineer, Joe?
I don't know how.
You have a fucking war problem and there's got to be some guy that stays behind to save the ship.
That's one way.
That's the way, right? This is the guy who has become like the father of warp dynamics, whatever. Like, this is the dude who should be writing the book of like, you go, the captain goes down with the ship, the engineer goes down with the warp core.
I feel like you could have, if you wanted to kill Trip in this episode for whatever reason, you could have done it better. It's just this way is so. Why this? Why was this the choice? I mean, yeah, it's definitely the worst idea they have. I like the idea of Trip getting killed, theoretically, but it had to be something a bit more actually high enough stakes because everything he survived so far, this just seems so cheap, right? Like you beat the Zindi, you beat the Klingons, you've beat the Romulans, you've united all of the species of the Alpha Quadrant in an alliance.
You beat a cum monster.
Yeah,
and reptile.
And here at the end, it's a bunch of fucking space pirates from Rigel 10, the place you literally were to start this fucking thing, just jamming your shit up so bad you decide to go Allah Akbar on them. Come on.
I'm not opposed, I guess, to a character dying, doing it in a, oh, hey, this happened before they pulled in. Stupid. Doing it in a Next Generation episode. Stupid. Make it read. Make it anybody else.
Make it read. No, just no, not anyone else. Just make it read. Just read.
He comes. And that would have been a great way to kill Reed too.
Yeah.
This is the guy that's been, was just every chance possible wanting to die.
And he dies defending his captain and his ship from invaders. That's like literally his job.
This is just the most clearest picture possible of Braga and Berman not understanding this fucking product. I hate it. I fucking hate this scene with a passion. I'm going to use another wish on this one. This has eaten up a lot of wishes.
They
don't just kill him though.
No, they don't. They have him linger in sick bay. So they can have like a dramatic sort of little last speech. He's pretty tore up. Phlox tries to save him and he dies off screen. Doesn't die on screen. We pick things up and T'Pol is putting his things away in his quarters. He's dead. T'Pol, you know.
Let me just jump in here. I can forgive this fucking atrocity of a scene. If you give me something, once Star Trek gets bought by a competent company, you give me the fucking scene where temporal agents come in and nab his ass out of that fucking chamber, throw a body double in and go, you're one of the greatest minds in Starfleet history. Here's a bunch of books. We need you to understand temporal mechanics and you are going to become the grandfather of whatever the temporal police shit is.
Yeah, like that's his fate, is this was all set up by the temporal.
Not as temporal, but hey, you just had a shitty death and we can't let you off the hook on getting back into your life. But like all that space math you were doing on the fly is actually legit impressive. And here, you're going to be in the fucking TVA for Star Trek.
The whole thing wraps up with them at the Federation Charter signing. I do like Archer's dress uniform, by the way. Very nice.
For something that doesn't have any zippers on it.
Yeah, like very slick. For
as far as onesies go, it's okay.
Yeah. And, you know, he's have his final farewell to Phlox and then to Paul. Gives to Paul a hug. Goes out there to give his speech that apparently becomes so famous everyone has to learn it in grade school, but you never hear it. And
great Ramrod writing there, by the way. That's some real 57s shit. Or no, 37s.
Yeah, we're not. Great speech. The speech is this huge part of this. Write this speech. I got to write this speech. And he writes it. And it's the most famous speech ever, and you don't hear a word of it.
Oh, we're so happy we all got to hear the speech. I hope nobody out there didn't get to hear the speech. I do like when it's time for him to go out there, they have a bald security guy come in, and that's like the smoldering catcher moment where it's like, all right, buddy, you've been with us 4 seasons.
You get to talk now.
Here's your 3 words. Enjoy your pay bump. There's that bonus for you.
Just for you, pal. A little extra on that last check.
Speaking of checks, when they finally, Riker pulls Trip in for his little interview to see what he wants to eat. How is it that he frames it? Oh, yeah, I trust Archer implicitly, and I don't just mean trust him. Like, I trust him not to hurt me, or I trust him not to steal my money. That stood out. So they're still using cash over there?
It makes sense, right? Like, sure, it wasn't, there was no lack of scarcity quite yet. Yeah, there's a scene where after he's dead, they like, he goes back to an earlier save state so we can talk to him. Like before they meet with Shran. I did like actually the background you get about Trip as everyone comes in to talk to Chef about him. Of like, he didn't go to college. He learned how to do engineering working on boats. And then Hoshi somehow
wanted to fuck him.
Yeah, Hoshi thought Reed he was
calls
cute.
Him a hick. She doesn't say he's cute. She said, I'd sleep with him, I think. This might be Mirror Universe Hoshi. I don't know.
Yeah. Reed thought he was a hick, that he wouldn't make it. You know, Phlox talks about when he tried to order him to take to sleep and he negotiated. So there's a lot of fun, like, Trip content. I just like the idea that he was a Florida hick that didn't go to college and learn how to do warp engineering, starting by working on boats.
Riker's supposed to be wrestling with, you know, this big moral dilemma about all these people he got stuck in rocks. And instead he's over there asking Hoshi if she'd let Trip put it in.
He's got his eye on the ball. His balls. Going near women.
Yep.
So, yeah. That's it. That's the episode. And it wraps up with, you know, Riker having committed to, I'm going to talk to Picard. They leave. And we get a nice, one of those classic exits where we're gonna divide up the speech lines between all the different captains of the Enterprises. And you start with Picard and go to Kirk and then end with Archer and take us into the starfield, and that's it.
And even that's a slap in the face, because you're going to say this is a love letter to the fans and this and that. And it's like, as someone who just sat through all of Voyager, and I know DS9's out there, you're going to completely cut 2 other shows that went 7 seasons from being included.
Well,
in this.
They specifically, if it's the Enterprise.
You can say that, but at the same time, this is supposed to be all of it. This is supposed to be all the Star Trek. So, again, they shit the bet on that one, too.
Well, I would ask what we're going to watch next week, but that's it. We've reached the end. We've seen all of Star Trek Enterprise. So there's only one and then 2 things to do, which is to rip it up. So we're going to do our season 4 rip next week. Because season 4 definitely deserves its own discussion separate from everything else. It's a lot to go over just there. And then we will have our Enterprise series rip the next week. I know we talked about possibly doing that live. I don't think there's a lot of folks who would be interested in watching live because we just have a very scattered audience. So we definitely respect that. So we're going to just pre-record both. But please, 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 especially for our series rip, continue to, and in whatever way you wish, whether it's on Facebook, on Discord, through an email, which obviously now you know I will both read and respond to, give us your thoughts about what we should talk about for the Enterprise series rip. We'd love to have your thoughts. And we'll see you next week.
Computer and program.